There's good news.
It's time again for Donald
Trump.
Theater.
No one knows what is up or down. Black or white.
Legal
or
impeachable.
Everything is make believe in Donald
Trump.
Theater.
So let's
pull
the
curtain
back.
We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. We can change the focus to a soft blur.
You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into.
The things that this show has called him, this approach is, I guess it's kind of like we're living in the Twilight Zone.
Russia had nothing to do with this episode.
Truth isn't truth.
This orange apparition, you lugubrious leech, you dopey doppelganger of deceit and deviance. You lethal liar, you dim-witted dictator, you foolish fascist!
Now that's the voice of a critic, but read this quote from Donald Trump's own chief of staff, allegedly saying he's unhinged, an idiot, it's pointless to convince him of anything, he's gone off the rails, we're in crazy town, I don't even know why any of us are here, John Kelly saying in the new Woodward book. This is the worst job I've ever had.
Just the news is just packed.
Yeah.
Just every day, crazy stuff happening, historically crazy stuff happening. We were prepared to talk about all of it. But it seems like an explosive book about the Trump White House comes out every few minutes at this point. What do we have? We had the Omarosa, we had the Unhinged, we had Fire and Fury,
yep.
And of course the novel Crazy Rich Caucasians. Such a landmark book, a landmark book. Now, today, the Washington Post has released some of Bob Woodward's expose of the Trump administration, Fear, a book named after the emotion Trump feels whenever he sees a book.
As you know and are living, we're at a pivot point in history.
Right.
And I would have liked to have done that, and I maximized my effort.
Right.
Somehow it didn't get to you, or
it's really too bad because nobody told me about it, and I would have loved to have spoken to you. You know, I'm very open to you. I think you've always been fair.
Bob Woodward, the reporter who brought down Richard Nixon, gave us a sneak peek of his brand new book that might bring down Trump. I mean, it probably won't, but it's pretty funny.
Some stunning breaking news. Even in this administration, 2 years in, explosive new details from legendary journalist Bob Woodward's new book about President Trump. Now listen to this. This guy is mentally retarded, Trump said of Sessions. He's the dumb Southerner, Trump told Porter, mocking Sessions by feigning a Southern accent.
Okay. I don't know what's worse, the fact that the President of the United States is running around calling people retarded, or the fact that the person he called retarded is his Attorney General and his first major political supporter. You realize that?
According to Woodward's new book, President Trump once told Rudy Giuliani that he was a baby. And then, out of habit, he added, "But I'm not the father." Excerpts from famed journalist Bob Woodward's forthcoming book about the Trump White House began to leak out, including one conversation where Trump's lawyer, John Dowd, warned Trump that if he testified in the Russia probe, he might go to jail. Dowd was convinced that Trump would commit perjury if he talked to special counsel Robert Mueller. But Trump, concerned about the optics of a president refusing to testify and convinced that he could handle Mueller's questions, had by then decided otherwise. Trump told Dowd, "I'll be a real good witness." Dowd replied, "You are not a good witness." Trump knew this book would be explosive because last month he called Woodward to talk about it. Woodward recorded the call, and as he explained to Trump what the book would be about, you can hear it slowly dawn on Trump that it could be very damaging for him.
It's also a difficult time where the political system and you and my business is being tested.
Yeah.
And, you know, I take it very seriously. I've done books on 8 presidents going back from Nixon, Obama.
Right.
And I learned something about reporting, frankly, Mr. President.
Good.
I've got to go talk to people and see them outside of the White House and outside of their offices, and gained a lot of insight and documentation, and it's, you know, it's a tough look at the world and your administration and you.
Right. Well, I assume that means it's going to be a negative book.
According to Bobby Dubs, nobody in the White House likes President Trump very much. Least of all, Chief of Staff John Kelly, who allegedly said, "I don't even know why any of us are here. This is the worst job I've ever had." It won't be the worst job forever, General. Your worst job will be explaining to your grandkids why you worked for the big orange baby cager. Kelly also said of Donald Trump, "He's an idiot. It's pointless to try to convince him of anything. He's gone off the rails. We're in crazy town." But it's a good thing that Kelly hasn't quit, because Trump doesn't seem to know much about the military. He is reportedly scolding his generals about Afghanistan, saying, "You should be killing guys. You don't need a strategy to kill people." Yes, and who needs a strategy in war? We all remember what Eisenhower said at D-Day, "Helter skelter, little piggies." And Kelly is not alone in his assessment. In the book, Trump's former personal lawyer, John Dowd, describes the president as a liar. At one meeting, Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis struggled to convince the president to keep troops in South Korea. Afterwards, Mattis told associates that the president acted like and had the understanding of a fifth or sixth grader. Former Chief of Staff Reince Priebus said the White House was like natural predators at the table, adding, "When you put a snake and a rat and a falcon and a rabbit and a shark and a seal in a zoo without walls, things start getting nasty and bloody." book says that earlier this year, Trump's former lawyer, John Dowd, gave him a practice interview for the one he might have with Mueller, which Trump failed. And this might be the craziest thing that my beard has ever said. It was such a disaster that Dowd and the other lawyer, Jay Sekulow, went to Mueller's office in person and reenacted the mock interview. Their goal? To argue that Trump couldn't possibly testify because he was incapable of telling the truth. Those are his lawyers trying to help him not go to jail.
Step back for a moment and consider the fact that Trump is trying to appoint someone to a lifetime seat on the Supreme Court while simultaneously being implicated in a truly staggering number of criminal cases and corruption scandals. That's like Bonnie getting arrested and saying, you know who'd make a great judge? Clyde.
He has said in the past he does not believe sitting president should be subject to criminal investigations.
Oh! While he's being investigated, he nominates a guy who thinks presidents shouldn't be investigated. Like, Trump's not even hiding his evil plan. Like,
can a sitting president be required to respond to a subpoena?
So that's a hypothetical question.
Trump claims he has an absolute right to pardon himself, does he?
The question of self-pardons is something I've never analyzed.
I would like your commitment that you will recuse yourself if there is an issue involving his criminal or civil liability.
I should not and may not make a commitment about how I would handle a particular case.
Do you still believe a president can fire at will a prosecutor who is criminally investigating him?
Well, that's a question of precedent.
You know? I'm asking about your position. That you stated in this Law Review article that a president should be not subject to investigations while in office.
Sarah, I'm not going to answer hypothetical questions. All I can say, Senator, is that was my view in 1998. I've not taken a position on constitutionality before. I need to be careful, and I need to stay not just away from the line, but three zip codes away from the line of current events or politics.
Just to review, here's what we already know about the various crimes and corruption scandals swirling around the president. His campaign chairman was convicted on 8 counts of tax and bank fraud. His deputy campaign chairman admitted to embezzlement and money laundering. His personal lawyer admitted he conspired with the president to break federal election laws to pay hush money to cover up an affair. His national security advisor pled guilty to lying to the FBI about his contacts with the Russians. His foreign policy advisor also pled guilty to lying to the FBI about his contacts with the Russians. His first congressional backer was indicted for insider trading. His second congressional backer was indicted for wire fraud and campaign finance violations. A Republican lobbyist just pled guilty to steering illegal funds from a pro-Russian oligarch to Trump's inauguration. Trump's already expressed support for a few of those guys, and now he's backing two more alleged criminals, GOP Congressman Chris Collins and Duncan Hunter. On Monday, Trump slammed Attorney General Jeff Sessions for allowing prosecutors to bring cases against them, openly admitting that those cases were hurting Republicans' chances in the midterm elections.
The president writes, quote, two long-running Obama-era investigations of two very popular Republican congressmen were brought to a well-publicized charge just ahead of the midterms by the Jeff Sessions Justice Department. Two easy wins, now in doubt because there is not enough time. Good job, Jeff. The Democrats, none of whom voted for Jeff Sessions, must love him now.
Think about that. Trump just openly admitted on Twitter that he wants the Justice Department, which is supposed to be independent, to cover up crimes by Republicans in order to help them win elections.
An extra, extra, read all about it.
Quote, the Times today is taking the rare step of publishing an anonymous op-ed essay. We have done so at the request of the author, a senior official in the Trump administration whose identity is known to us and whose job would be jeopardized by its disclosure. We believe publishing this essay anonymously is the only way to deliver an important perspective to our readers. The headline there, I am part of the resistance inside the Trump administration. And then there's the subhead, quote, I work for the president, but like-minded colleagues and I have vowed to thwart parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations.
So when you tell me about some anonymous source within the administration, probably who's failing and probably here for all the wrong reasons, no. And the New York Times is failing. If I weren't here, I believe the New York Times probably wouldn't even exist.
I'm not trying to beat up on the president here, but the truth is you build a team by building a cause that's bigger than yourself. And right now, so much of what comes out of the White House is just trying to figure out how to divide Americans.
This is a statement from the press secretary regarding the anonymous New York Times op-ed from the White House. I promise you, I have a feeling I know who dictated this statement. but let me read it from the top. Nearly 62 million people voted for President Donald J. Trump in 2016, earning him 306 electoral votes versus 232 for his opponent. None of them voted for a gutless, anonymous source to the failing New York Times. We are disappointed but not surprised that the paper chose to publish this pathetic, reckless, and selfish op-ed. This is a new low for the so-called paper of record, and it should issue an apology just as it did after the election for its disastrous coverage of the Trump campaign. This is just another example of the liberal media's concerted effort to discredit the president.
Quote, President Trump is facing a test to his presidency unlike any faced by a modern American leader. The dilemma, which he does not fully grasp, is that many of the senior officials in his own administration are working diligently from within to frustrate parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations. I would know. I am one of them. Quote, to be clear, ours is not the popular resistance of the left. We want the administration to succeed and think that many of its policies have already made America safer and more prosperous. But we believe our first duty is to this country, and the president continues to act in a manner that is detrimental to the health of our republic. That is why many Trump appointees have vowed to do what we can to preserve our democratic institutions while thwarting Mr. Trump's more misguided impulses until he is out of office. So this is a currently serving administration official who's saying that he or she speaks for others. Other senior people in the administration who have, quote, vowed to each other, like in an organized way, vowed to thwart the president's actions to save the country from him because he continues to act in a manner that is detrimental to the health of our republic.
Isn't it a shame that someone can write an article or book, totally make up stories, and form a picture of a person that is literally the exact opposite of the fact and get away with it without retribution or cost? Don't know why Washington politicians don't change libel laws.
And then we get this warning that is first about the dangerousness of the president's character, and second, about the dangerousness of what this senior administration official says is what the president wants for our country. Quote, the root of the problem is the president's amorality. Anyone who works with him knows he is not moored to any discernible first principles that guide his decision making. Although he was elected as a Republican, the president shows little affinity for ideals long espoused by conservatives, free minds, free markets, and free people. Quote, in addition to his mass marketing of the notion that the press is the enemy of the people, President Trump's impulses are generally anti-trade and anti-democratic. Quote, in public and in private, President Trump shows a preference for autocrats and dictators, says a senior White House official. Quote, from the White House to executive branch departments and agencies, senior officials will privately admit their daily disbelief at the commander-in-chief's comments and actions. Most are working to insulate their operations from his whims. Meetings with him veer off topic and off the rails. He engages in repetitive rants, and his impulsiveness results in half-baked, ill-informed, and occasionally reckless decisions that have to be walked back. The op-ed then describes the president as impetuous, adversarial, petty, describes his behavior as, quote, erratic.
This is the president's tweet just now, the president of the United States, in response to the op-ed. Does the so-called senior administration official really exist, or is it just the failing New York Times with another phony source? If the gutless anonymous person does indeed exist, the Times must, for national security purposes, turn him her over to the government at once.
I think we probably don't know yet how crazy it is in there.
And you're saying how crazy is Crazy Town?
Yeah, I think Crazy Town.
You know that it's a town
really
that begins with the word crazy.
Yeah, I mean we hear about 30-minute rants.
Yeah.
Well, think about that for a minute. 30 minutes is a long time.
Viewers of this show know we don't regularly pull Trump tweets and post them. In fact, there are many tweets every day, and we rarely feature them. My control room tells me that there is a bizarre response from the president that meets our bar, given the import of this story, the all-caps treason question mark.
Extra, read all about it.
The administration official, by the way, who authored the op-ed, also says that Trump officials have considered attempts to remove him from office. Quote, given the instability many witnessed, there were early whispers within the cabinet of invoking the 25th Amendment, which would start a complex process for removing the president. But no one wanted to precipitate a constitutional crisis, so we will do what we can to steer the administration in the right direction until one way or another it's over.
But if they all got there together, theoretically, the 25th Amendment might be useful for removing President Trump from the office of the presidency. From within. At least temporarily. Is that what they're telling us needs to be done here? Or what they're telling us is going to be done here? In the Michael Wolff book, Fire and Fury, that came out early this year, Steve Bannon is quoted twice invoking the 25th Amendment when it comes to President Trump. Quote, Spicer, Priebus, Cohn, meaning Gary Cohn, Powell, Bannon, Tillerson, Mattis, Mnuchin, virtually the entire senior staff and cabinet of the Trump presidency had traveled through the stages of adventure, challenge, frustration, battle, self-justification, and doubt before finally having to confront the very real likelihood that the president they worked for did not have the wherewithal to adequately function in his job. The debate, as Steve Bannon put it, was not about whether the president's situation was bad, but whether it was 25th Amendment bad. Then a few pages later in the book, toward the end of the book, Bannon is quoted again, predicting that there is a one-third chance that Trump would, quote, limp to the end of his term, a one-third chance that the Mueller investigation would lead to the impeachment of the president, and a one-third chance, quote, that Trump would resign, perhaps in the wake of a threat by the cabinet to act on the 25th Amendment, by which the cabinet can remove a president in the event of his incapacitation. In this case today, someone in the White House is trying to warn the country that the president is nuts and unfit, and the senior people who work around him know it. And the end is near, maybe in the form of the invocation of the 25th Amendment by the Vice President of the United States and a majority of the president's cabinet.
So Trump is such a danger to America that his cabinet thought about using the 25th Amendment to remove him from office, but then they decided not to use it because it would be too messy? The 25th Amendment is there so that you can use it. It's like there's a sign that says, in case of emergency, break glass. But then these guys are like, I mean, we could break the glass, but then there'd be glass everywhere. I mean, before this, I knew there was turbulence. But now someone just came on the PA system and was like, ladies and gentlemen, the pilot is actively trying to crash the plane. But don't be alarmed. We're doing everything we can to stop him. Mikey's got a pretty good chokehold, and I've said some pretty harsh words. So please keep your seatbelts fastened and enjoy your peanuts and tax cuts.
Today's op-ed piece will take its place in history for many reasons, but it is the first recorded instance in the history of the 25th Amendment of that amendment being discussed in a White House where the president is physically healthy and fully conscious. The cabinet was whispering about the 25th Amendment early on because of Donald Trump's amorality. And so Donald Trump's circle of trust has reportedly been reduced to a point that seemed easily predictable at the outset. The Washington Post is reporting tonight Trump already felt that he had a dwindling circle of people he could trust, a senior administration official said. According to one Trump friend, he fretted after Wednesday's op-ed that he could only trust his children.
I can trust you, right?
No.
Because we're calling a vote of no confidence on my dad.
3 votes in favor. One more makes us sure winners.
What's performance issues?
I think
I love my father,
but he is currently unfit to run this.
And I'm calling for a vote of no confidence in him as.
Economic advisor Gary Cohn reportedly preventing the president from withdrawing from a trade agreement with South Korea by swiping a letter off his desk. And after the president told Defense Secretary James Mattis he wanted to assassinate Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad for a chemical attack on civilians, Mattis reportedly told the president on the phone he would do it, but then telling a senior aide, quote, we're not going to do any of that.
They're making the case
like we are here to serve and we want to do this. That leads to a second problem, though, which is that we don't have governments run by self-appointed guardrails. So this person describes, in his words, a two-track, or, well, I think that the tweet from the Times may be implying it's a he, but maybe not, a two-track presidency. Somebody explain to me what a two-track presidency is. We elect a president, and whether you like Donald Trump or not, he is the elected president. Now what we have from Bob Woodward's reporting and from this op-ed is it's very clear, a group of people who have anointed themselves to make decisions about how the government is supposed to be run. You may like how those decisions turn out, but that is not how this government is supposed to work.
We've gotten used to that little tang of panic in the back of our throats when we remember that a former reality show star and unindicted co-conspirator is the commander-in-chief.
We are in an hour of national emergency in this country. That is evidenced by the president's behavior and erratic behavior that we see in public every day, by the account of this op-ed, and of course by Bob Woodward's book, a journalist of the highest standards and reputation who has distinguished himself over a lifetime of meticulous reporting about how the powerful act. We know that this administration is vile, corrupt, and likely criminal. We know that this president is immoral, that he is mentally and intellectually unfit for his office. What I would say back to the author of this op-ed is that this resistance inside the administration, whomever they are, must now gather. And one of them, the best of them, the toughest, the hardest, the most credible, must come forward into the light. They must take the full step, and they must tell the American people the truth.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.